Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Golf Conversations podcast. Today's guest is golf's preeminent golf landscape artist. She's world-renowned. She's a tremendous talent. People around the art world are crazy about her, including me. And I'd like to welcome the lovely Miss Linda Hartow to the podcast. Hi, Linda.
Hi. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. Doing all right. Thank you. Nice to see you. I saw you about 10 or 11 years ago. I came to visit you at your home. And, you know, it was one of those places where you have to go through the security gate. And yeah. I left my name there. And before you know it, the cop showed up and took me away. So must have been a misunderstanding. Eventually, I got in there and it was great to see you in your studio and your horses. And how are the horses, by the way?
Well, one of them is no longer with us, but the other one is. So,
and what's his name?
Her name is, I named her after my favorite scotch, which was McCallum. So her name is, I call her Callie, but she's Miss McCallum.
Oh, very nice. Is she aged 26 years, 36 years, 18 years?
You know, I'm not sure what she is. She's 20 something.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Good for her. Well, you know, in preparing for this fantastic interview, I listened to some of the other recent interviews that are on the internet with you.
Okay.
And everybody kind of starts off with, tell us about your beginnings. How did you become an artist? Blah, 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 blah. Well, I already did that with you like 11 years ago. And for you folks out there in podcast land who still know how to read, go to my website, golfconversations.com, go to the written interviews link, and then the artists and writers link, and you will see a very comprehensive interview with Linda, and you can learn how, you know, Linda got her start in the art world. And so we're not going to go over that again today. But, you know, Linda, what's interesting.
Yeah, just so they know, it's been with me all my life. So.
What was that?
I just so they know, it's been with me all my life. It's just golf entered into it about 37 years ago. So.
So when you were 20 or so, that's when it started.
Yeah, right.
Okay. You know, the last half of your name, T-O-U-G-H, means tough. And let me tell you out there in podcast land, Linda is tough because she sacrificed a lot and worked really hard in her early years to try to survive as an artist. Yeah. And you had to support yourself selling all kinds of, quote, art, unquote, to the masses. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, what kind of crap were you selling?
Well, none of it was crap.
I didn't mean crap, but I meant things that perhaps you didn't want to do.
There wasn't a whole lot I really didn't want to do, but I did what I like to do, but also I knew that most people would also like, and the price, and it was done quick enough, and the price was good enough, then it made me a good living.
Okay.
But I don't think I ever painted anything I didn't really want to paint.
Okay. Well, did you ever dabble?
I drew the line there. You know, if someone asked me to do, I did a lot of commission work. I was used to doing that. But if someone asked me to do something I didn't want to do, I didn't.
So you never dabbled in the lucrative dogs playing poker genre?
Oh, no, we didn't go there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But I do kind of recall you might have done some work for magazines of an adult nature.
Oh, yeah. When I was in the Art Institute of Chicago, yeah, I did a little freelance illustration, which was sort of interesting. It was like a political satire in a local newspaper. And some of it was a bit risque, so it was fun.
Yeah, well, I know your fans would love to see that. Mm-hmm. Put that up on the website.
Yeah, I wish I still had that stuff, you know, at the time. I just gave it to him and I never saw it again. So. Mm.
Well,
I didn't know, you know, I would have liked to have them now.
Yes, it would. Times. That was Linda Hartow's blue period, if I may compare you to Picasso.
Yeah, starving artist period.
That's right. Well, again, just to let everyone know, it's not like Linda was hanging around Augusta National her whole career. When she started out, she worked hard, went to all these art fairs, and it wasn't easy, correct?
No, it wasn't easy, but it was there, and the opportunities were there, and I could see them as opportunities, so I took advantage of them.
Now, do you paint subjects other than golf landscapes?
Oh, yeah, I'll do. I've done a few just pure landscapes, actually a few recently, when just scenes from the island here in South Carolina, low country scenes. Yeah, I guess my first love is any kind of landscape with any kind of trees. I love trees. But yeah, I'll do them when I can work them in, sure.
Now, I know you also love horses. You have...
I have done horse portraits and some equine art back really about the same time I started doing golf in the mid-80s. But the golf people won out and the equine people lost, so...
You know, in my younger days, I used to frequent the racetracks. And I would spend my summers in Saratoga, and there was an equine artist there. I think his name was Anthony Alonzo, who I really liked his work. You know, it's not too late for you to jump into that market. And I'm thinking, marry the equine market with the golf landscape market, and here's what you do. You paint Secretariat standing on the seventh hole at Pebble Beach.
Oh, yeah, that wouldn't go over real well, I don't think.
Okay, well, again, these are the kinds of ideas that plunge people into bankruptcy. I'm just throwing them out there.
Because I noticed, you know, the little bit I did in the equine art world was like the people that were commissioning things didn't want to see anything but their horse or their breed. But mostly their horse. So it narrowed the field quite a lot. And with golf, it wasn't like that at all. It's like any course. They love looking at it. They might have played it. Maybe they've never played it, but they still love it and want it. So there was a big difference there in the way that people perceive the art. You know, it wasn't like, well, that's not my horse. I'm not interested in that.
Yeah.
It's like they love all the courses.
That's
a big difference.
That is a big difference. And but do you ever get inquiries from people to for commissions for an actual portrait of a person?
Yeah, I did portraits for a while too. But the same thing, you know, people have a completely different idea of what they look like. And sometimes it's not what I see.
Yes. So you never
had some portraits.
If a private club contacted you and said, "Hey, we'd like you to do a portrait of our dead Greens Committee chairman," that wouldn't be something that would be interesting to you.
Not now, no.
Okay. All right.
Back in the days when any inquiry was of interest, it might have been.
And how these days? How do the inquiries come in? How does a club get in touch with you and say, hey, we're interested in...
I have a web presence and I'm, you know, pretty well known because of my work with the U.S. Open and with Augusta. So I'm not hard to find. You put in my name in Google and you'll find me.
Yes, it's true. You're not hard to find. I found you. So if I can find you, anyone can find you.
I've been around on the website or on the web since 1997, so I would say I'm not too hard to find.
Well, I believe you and Al Gore invented the internet.
I had one of the first websites, I have to say.
I remember that.
You know, I didn't even know how to look at it. I didn't have a computer at the time, but I, at that time, National Golf Foundation was saying that everyone needs to have a website now. So I said, okay, I'll do that. And I kind of, you know, through them, I got a contact on someone who was building websites. And we used it initially just as an online catalog. We didn't have a shop or anything. Nobody had shops then. But yeah, I jumped on it right away. And it was, you know, a good thing to do.
Yeah. So I recall you, I don't know if you still do, but didn't you used to have a store in Hilton Head or something?
Yeah.
Or a gallery?
Mm-hmm. Down in Harbortown, yeah.
Harbortown, yeah. Are you still there?
No, but I do have a showroom and a warehouse over on Hilton Head.
Okay.
So, yeah, we just don't have a retail store anymore, like, you know, open to the public all the time. It's just appointment or whenever, but it's where all the web orders go and all the framing and shipping and, you know, it's like a showroom warehouse.
Yeah, well, this is a real positive for you. Why have a gallery that you have to keep open when you can do it all on the internet?
Galleries were nice, but 2008 sort of ended that.
Mm-hmm. Can't have any wine and cheese parties at your house, can you?
That was the end of an era. 2008 changed a lot of things.
Okay. And I think people are interested in your work habits as an artist. What's your work schedule like? Do you paint every day? What time do you start in the morning? When do you stop? That sort of thing.
Yeah. When I'm actually working on a painting, I try to work every day if I can, but you know, there's also life to do. And there's self-maintenance and property maintenance and business maintenance and emails and all the other business stuff. So yeah, when I find time to paint, I paint. But sometimes when I'm on a deadline, especially if I'm really into it, everything else goes out the window and I just concentrate on it.
Yeah, well, how can you have time to paint when you have to do crap like this with me? So I apologize in advance.
Well, I'm between paintings right now.
Okay, so well, thank you for squeezing me in. Now, do you have a list of work that you're doing and upcoming work? Do you have a whole full schedule for the next 10 years?
Well, yeah, I'll always be painting. That's all I know how to do, whether it's golf or...
But commissions, things that people have said they want to give you money for.
I have some tentative ones right now that haven't, you know, I haven't got a concrete thing yet. But
yeah.
I just finished one for Glenview Club up in Chicago. And they're having the Western Amateur next week, I believe.
Yeah.
So that was a big project, and we're just now getting all that stuff out the door and up to them. So it's been busy getting that done.
So how long would you say it takes you from start to finish to do an oil painting of a golf course?
Well, it depends on the size, but if they're large, it can take 6 months for one painting. If they're medium size, usually about 3 months, two to three months. And then there's production. It has to go get digital capture. It has to be proofed. Prints have to be signed and blah, blah, blah. So there's sometimes a month follow-up just doing, you know, all the things that go with the painting for the club or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
And I have not done any actual tournament work now since 2014. I used to do the US Open every year, did that for 25 years. And I used to work at the Masters as well. And, you know, that's, I had to stop doing that. That was just too much.
Just interacting with people for a week? Was that why it was too much?
Yeah, it was partially that, but all the prep for it and the fulfillment and you know, going to the course ahead of time, getting the photographs, doing the painting, doing the prints, marketing, you know, getting it all to the event, you know, all the packaging. It's a big thing.
And it's a big to-do.
Then you're at the event, you know, and you're pretty much exposed to 30, 40,000 people a day. You know, it's rough.
People want to touch you, see you, get your autograph.
You know, you've been to tournaments.
I have, but I've never wanted to touch anyone in a tent.
Well, you know what I mean. I mean, just the logistics, getting to it, getting back, you know, getting to your hotel, and endless stuff.
I know.
Full 10, 12 days.
Yes. So let's say a sample golf course commissions you to do a painting. Mm-hmm. And they happen to be located in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So what's the next step? You have to get yourself up to that course and do what?
Yep, that's right. I go to the course, depending on how well known it is. There's maybe a particular scene that's kind of a no-brainer, or I may have to figure out what the best scene would be. And it's a group decision between the club and me and what I think is best as far as marketing, their marketing goals, or if it's an individual purchasing, it might be just the individual's favorite hole or scene. You know, it just depends. And then once we sort of narrow it down, then I sort of live with that hole for a while.
Like for how long? How long are you sitting there?
I usually schedule a week because, you know, the weather and the light. Once you figured out where you want to be, then you have to find the right light. So I have to be there at dawn. I have to be there at dusk, you know, and it depends on that day's weather. So it can take a good week. If whenever I went to the UK, I always schedule at least 2 weeks over there, and then per course, at least 1 week.
So, for example, if you were at Augusta, now one of your famous paintings is of Azalea at the 13th hole. So mm-hmm. if you were starting that from scratch, you would position yourself where? In the right side of the fairway or next to the hole? What would happen if golfers were playing through?
I painted the 13th hole about, I don't know, six times at least, seven times.
I hope you finally got it right.
Yeah, I did one that was a really definitive one in 2000, and I believe you have a print of it.
I should hope so. That's the definitive one.
But I photographed that course every year forever. And every year, everything would be a little bit different. And the year before I did that particular image, the bloom was just fantastic. I mean, so many times, according to the weather, different things would bloom at different times. You know, they would never all bloom at once. And that year, everything was just spot on in 1 week. So, and I always usually went the week before the Masters to do the, you know, reference work. And it was just perfect that year. That's all I can say.
Well, Linda, you really set me up on that one because, you know, I bloom in the fall. Bloom in fall. Okay. But I'm bum.
Augusta in the fall is completely different and not the same.
Okay. But if you were going to paint the 13th hole again, mm-hmm. would you sit yourself in a lounge chair in the fairway and take pictures? I mean, where would you be? Would you be walking all around the hole?
I don't know.
Okay, well, maybe on the seventh, eighth time you try it, you'll figure it out. I know you can do it, too.
You know, it just depends on how it hits you when you're taking the pictures. It depends on the light. It depends on time of year, everything. It just, you just don't know. I mean, it changes every year.
Now, when you do the 13th hole, you never run down the fairway, do you? Because there's no running allowed there.
Okay. No.
All right. That was a semi-joke.
I have a little golf cart, and I try to stay out of it. There's usually never anybody there, so
that's true.
But it's pretty easy to stay out of people's way, but
so hardly anyone ever there. So Linda, can you get me on the course, just, you know, between you and me? What do you mean no? Okay, all right, forget I even asked. So when you go to a golf course to do your research, you're taking photographs, does the club at least buy you lunch?
I guess sometimes.
Depends
on the place.
A real golf course, a fancy schmancy club. Do they say, Linda, come by at 12 o'clock for a club sandwich?
And sometimes I stay at the course, actually at the club. So that's nice.
Okay.
Yeah, depends on the club, you know.
All right. Now, let's talk about the physical demands. Let's stop fooling around for a second, okay? I'm trying to be serious here. Okay. What are some of the physical demands of being a painter? How does it affect your fingers, your hands, your eyesight, and any other body parts you'd care to mention?
Well, I have to admit, I'm not as agile as I used to be as far as finding unusual angles. If it's a course that has, like, for instance, I remember a place in Stone Canyon in Arizona, and they have these rocks, you know, and I thought, you know, I'll bet that hole would really look good on top of that rock, but I'm not going to be climbing those rocks anymore. Maybe in my younger days, I would have climbed up on those rocks, but it's a little, I'm not as happy about going into the bush as I used to be, no matter where it is.
No, I think I didn't make myself understood. I apologize. What I was trying to ask you was, when you're sitting there at your easel, do you find that, we're all getting old. Are your fingers as dexterous as they used to be? Do you find that you need to stop more often, give it a rest? Are your eyes still doing what they should be doing?
Everything is fine in that respect.
Okay, good.
I'm not having any problems there.
Good.
I'll sit down for a while, sure, but I always did. Sometimes you just have to walk away from it just to, you know, have a fresh look again.
I know, like if you're at the driving range and you're hitting lots of golf balls, and I mean lots of golf balls, after a while, your fingers start getting a little numb. And me not being an artist, I'm just wondering, you know, after a while, do your fingers get a little numb from painting?
I have to raise my arm, you know, to paint up.
Yeah.
I'm usually like up like that. So that can get a little tired after a while, especially since I broke this arm about, 6-7 years ago.
Oh.
So it gets a little tired. But not bad. I don't think it inhibits me really at all.
Okay. Just, now your fingers.
I notice it, you know. I notice that it's a little.
Yeah. How did you break your arm?
I fell.
You fell. Okay.
I broke the top of my humerus on the, you know, on the humerus.
Yeah. Broke it off. Not like riding a horse.
No, it wasn't from a horse. It was just a trip on a curb. Really dumb stuff.
Okay. now your fingers, your beautiful fingers, your artistic, gentle, lovely fingers are your livelihood.
Yes.
Are they insured by Lloyd's of London?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay. I'd like to sit down with you after dinner and talk to you about a nice policy. And how are you fixed for life insurance? Okay, we can talk about this later. We're going to take a quick pause now, Linda. Don't go away because we have an interesting message here from my sponsor. Hold on, don't go away.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Equipment in Theory, where Zexio USA VP Chuck Theory answers today's most pressing golf equipment questions. Zexio, which is spelled XXIO, has been the number one golf club brand in Japan for 17 straight years. It's also currently the number one brand in Korea and New Zealand. Zexio and its ambassador, Ernie Els, are now spreading the word in the U.S. that if you're a golfer with a moderate swing speed, you should demo Zexio irons and drivers. You can learn more at ZexioUSA.com. That's XXIOUSA.com. And now let's send it over to Chuck.
Hey, Chuck, it's Robert. Got another question for you.
All right, Robert, let's see what you got today.
Okay. What percentage of golf clubs are manufactured for left-handed golfers?
That's a pretty easy one for me. It's with almost all manufacturers, it's going to be somewhere between 7 and 10% of the golf clubs. One of the very interesting things about that is that, like most golf manufacturers in the United States, they're usually the U.S. division is really the North American division. And the percentage of left-handed golf clubs in Canada is much, much higher. Like our Canadian, this is like 30% left-handed. And our U.S. business is 7 to 10% left-handed. So dramatically different. And you know why that is?
Because of hockey?
Because of hockey. It's exactly right. It's exactly right. You go to a club in Canada and you show up as a single, there's a good chance you're going to be paired with two or three lefties. Happens all the time. So it's pretty, pretty interesting. And obviously one of the more famous Canadian golfers, Mike Weir, is a good example of that. He's a lefty and won the Masters. Very interesting. In the United States, 7 to 10%. And that's really among men. Among women, it's even a smaller number. But in Canada, much higher numbers.
Interesting. Okay, very good. Well, thanks for that answer, Chuck. And I'll see you next week.
I look forward to it, Robert. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Now, getting back to the 13th at Augusta, you mentioned that I have that print.
Yeah.
And which print was that? It was the 13th at Augusta. I have number 740 out of 950.
Right.
So for all my life, whenever I've heard about art prints, you always hear that after the last print, we are destroying the plates, never to be seen again. And tell me a little bit about that. Are the plates actually destroyed? And are you there when the plates are destroyed? Where are those plates?
Yes, there are plates. Those were offset lithographs, and those plates were definitely destroyed.
Yeah, were you there when it happened?
I always went to, I was on press when I did my prints. Yeah. I did everything. I had to do it all. I didn't have I had a publisher for a while, but it didn't work. So I did all my own publishing to start with. And then after I realized that wasn't going to work, I did it all back again. And I learned, you know, how to proof and how to go on press and make changes and change the plates. And then when we agreed, they ran the whole edition and that was done. But now not many people do that anymore. There's right. not much offset lithography being done because it's mostly G-Clay printing now, which is better in some ways. Quality is better. And you don't have to print the whole edition at one time. So you don't have the storage and the, you know, when you did the lithographs, you'd do it all at once.
Well, just if I may press you on that point, mm-hmm. you were there when the plates were destroyed of the print that I purchased. Those plates are destroyed. Yeah, where did this happen?
Lithochrome Company in Columbus, Georgia.
Okay. No way those plates are ever going to be put back together again. I'm just trying to protect my investment here, Linda. Okay. That's what I'm concerned about. That's because
the printer's not even there anymore.
Okay, so. Good. That's what I want to hear. Now, has anyone ever contacted you? And anyone ever contacted you and said, hey, you know, I'm looking for number 740 out of 950 of the 13th at Augusta. Do you know whatever happened to that?
No, we don't know who has what number.
Okay. Well, now the internet knows. I got number 740. If you want it, make me a good offer, okay? And Linda, you'll be in for a taste. Don't worry.
occasionally we get secondary market prints that people want to sell. So sometimes we have one too.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a place on the website that's secondary market, but you know, we don't spend a lot of time with that, but there are some people that want to sell their prints. You know, they no longer have room or, you know, retired or whatever.
Or the third reason, they hate golf, can't stand it anymore. Not that I don't feel that way. Just want you to know that.
And their kids are selling it. You know?
Okay. Yeah, that's it. That's more like it. Now, I have number 1,035 out of 1,250 of the 8th at Pebble Beach. So, right. And finally, I have number 257 out of 850 of the 14th and 4th at Carnoustie.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. That's and sold out. Good. Sell them out. You know, if you run into any collectors, you know, don't forget my name. And I should tell everyone that I purchased these prints way before I even interviewed Linda back in 2010. Even back then, maybe 2008, I recognized what an amazing artist Linda is. And I so admired her work and appreciated the beauty and the detail. And it was a real pleasure to actually get to meet you about a year later. And that's no BS.
Okay.
Thank you
very much. Appreciate
yes. It. Now, you know, Linda, that print I have of the 13th at Augusta, could I send that back to you and you could do a little pencil drawing remark on it?
It already has remarks on it.
Okay, but I'm thinking of my own individual remark. Specifically,
I don't do that anymore.
Yeah, well, hear me out because I think you might want to do what I'm suggesting.
Okay, whatever.
I'd like you to do a pencil drawing of a golfer bending over Race Creek with a ball retriever.
That would be you, right?
That would be me with my hat on backwards.
Right.
Okay. I don't think this is going over so well.
I don't think I'll be doing that.
Okay. I don't think Augusta would care for that either. Well, listen, Linda, you have been lovely to chat with. I so admire your artistry and your work. And all you podcast listeners out there, Linda's website is harto.com. That's harto.com. And Linda has so many beautiful things for sale, not just,
we run a lot of specials too. And we have contests, guess the winner contests quite often. If you sign up for the emails, we send out a guess the winner email, and then you get a free print. You guess the winner.
Is it too late for me to tell you who I think is going to win the British Open?
Yeah, it kind of is.
We
have a lot of people that guess Morikawa. So when we have a lot of people guess the same person, then we draw from all of those that guessed him.
Yeah, and
guess the print. So and we'll be doing a contest for the Ryder Cup and different things. Yeah.
So the Ryder Cup, you could have a contest. Who's going to win in a fist fight, DeChambeau or Brooks Koepka? That would be a good contest.
We came up with a pretty good contest the last Ryder Cup, so we're going to have to look that one up and see what we did. It was something about how many points or something or other, who's the winner and how many points. I don't remember.
Okay.
We'll come up with something. It's just kind of fun to do that. A lot of people like participating in it.
So. Well, just want to remind people that when you go to Linda's website, harto.com, harto.h, she has many different wonderful things for sale. In addition to prints and paintings, she's got note cards and posters, and you know, you don't have to be a zillionaire to buy some beautiful artwork from Linda. So I strongly recommend that you go there. And Linda, thank you very much for putting up with my nonsense. It was lovely to chat with you again. And I hope I'll get to see you in person one of these days.
I hope so too. And anytime you're near the Hilton Head area, let me know. I'm right here in Spring Island, not far from Hilton Head. So, yeah.
Okay.
Nice chatting with you very much.
All right, Linda. Bye. Take care. See you soon. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care.
And that concludes another Golf Conversations podcast. If you'd like subscription information on how you can get this podcast delivered to your mobile phone, please visit my website, www.golfconversations.com, and click the subscribe link. Also, if you folks have any people out there that you think would be good guests on the podcast and that you'd like me to interview, please email me your suggestions at golfconversations@gmail.com. Thank you all very much for listening. And until we yak again, this is Robert Blumenthal saying so long and farewell.